This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751, or send in your question through the website www.beatyourgenes.org. All right, good evening, everybody. It's Nate G. here, along with Dr. Doug Lyle. Dr. Lyle, how are you doing this evening?
Good. How about yourself? You doing good?
I'm doing pretty good here at the Fasty Escape, Taking a look at some health questions. We got a couple of health questions that came into the email, both my Fasty Escape email and the Beat Your Genes email. So I figured we'd tackle them this week.
Good. All right.
All right. So, Dr. Lyle, I've been struggling with my weight forever. Every diet that I've tried, I've done diligently, and the weight has come off, but eventually it all comes back again. It's to the point that I'm just tired of searching and trying different diets that I know probably won't work. I know and I feel I need to make a change in the whole foods plant-based diet. It makes a lot of sense, but I'm at the point where I'm not sure if I have what it takes to deal with all the cravings and everything else that I've done whenever I tried a new diet. In addition, I constantly have to deal with my friends and family arguing with me about the changes in my new diet, which they have done every time I've tried. What should I do?
Okay, it's actually a deceptively complicated question. There's actually quite a few issues that this person is raising. So let's begin with the first one, and that is that the person talks about how the weight always comes back. Now let's talk about why that would be. The reason is that there's actually a folklore out there about the concept of a set point. So people think that, Dr. Phil calls it your get real, what you're really going to weigh. So if you're 40 pounds overweight, your get real weight might be that you're going to lose 15 pounds and then you're never going to lose any more. The reason why people think that essentially there's a set point is because so often if they lose weight for a while, their weight returns back to that point. Now that's not because there's some magic homing device inside your head that is headed to that weight. What it means is that your behavior is inherently stable. So when the person shifts their behavior, as this person has talked about, I'm going to assume it's a she just because the males would snarl at the family and friends, and so it's a woman that's more sensitive about probably the negative feedback. What's happening is that her behavior is stable at a given weight, and then she goes on some kind of a diet, and then her behavior is changed. So her weight then changes. And then what happens is her behavior changes back, and her weight then goes back. So it's people tend to think of it as the weight mysteriously heads back right to where it started, but in fact, it's the behavior returns to where they started, and therefore the weight then follows. Okay, so it's important to realize that no animal is designed to be overweight, and if you're overweight, it's because we're consuming foods that are too rich. Animals don't overeat the amount of foods, and neither do humans. What they can do, however, is they can eat too many calories, so there's a difference. So if a person typically eats about 4 pounds of food a day, they're going to more or less eat those 4 pounds of food in all probability, pretty close. And the only way that that person would ever systematically overeat would be if they were to eat a diet that was inconsistent with the natural history of the species. So, and that diet, and that diet being, when I say inconsistent, inconsistently rich. In other words, there's more calories per pound or per cubic centimeter, however it is that you want to call it. There's more calories in the food than would have been typically the case in our natural history. So if you know, animals able to free feed on their food of their natural history do not systematically overeat and they don't get fat. So the reason why the person has weight return and she's failed repeated times on diets is that that the food she eventually returns to is not food of the natural history. It's the rich food of the modern fare in some combination. So she sounds like she's very health conscious. So even when she's struggling with her weight and she's at her sort of baseline high weight, she may be doing a lot of things right. And that baseline weight is the result of some X percentage of those calories being above the calories consistent with the natural history of the organism. If she were to add some cheese and crackers and olive oil, then her weight would even go up further than that. Okay? So if some diet guru convinced her that she should be dipping her you know, broccoli in olive oil, then that person would then gain weight. And they would gain weight until they hit some equilibrium, you know, that might be 10 or 20 or 30 pounds heavier than she is now. So then now she talks about further, so she's really frustrated, tried a bunch of different diets. And, of course, virtually every diet, the solution that is being proposed is some combination of two concepts, two or three concepts, but predominantly two concepts. And one of them is going to be that we're going to change the content of what you eat. We're going to knock out some really rich foods. And the other thing that we're going to do is we're going to exercise portion control. So we're going to have you eat less than you've been eating by amount, as well as try to knock out some of the particularly rich foods. Now, if you and when they do that, she's had some success from this. But the problem is that if you're eating less than you want by using some kind of restriction on portion control, then what's going to happen is you're going to be hungry. And so what's going to happen is eventually your determination to continue to systematically be hungry is going to go out the window, and then we're going to return to eating the amount that we ate before, and then the weight comes back. Okay, so the most prescriptions for diets are a mind bender, and that's why I call my way of going about doing this losing weight without losing your mind. So it's you can see this video that I shot. Chef AJ set up a talk for me to do down in a church in Los Angeles several years ago. And so my hair was more brown and less gray. But it's a nice introduction to how it is that we go about doing this problem. What we want to do is we want to move the diet, morph the diet towards a whole plant food type diet with minimum amount of processed food. And if a person includes animal food or not, it's not really the big issue. The big issue is the overall calorie density of the diet, and whether that calorie density exceeds what is typical for the natural history of our species. Now, so there's sort of two sets of cravings. So there's more than one craving that we have to be concerned about. One of them is the craving by amount, and that can be a problem when you're trying to diet in a way where you're trying to eat less than you want consistently. So that's a problem. So we don't actually have to face that problem. We simply have to eat the correct type of food of modest intermediate level caloric density consistent with the natural history of our species, and then the person can eat as much as they want. Now, which brings us to the second problem. And the second problem is the cravings for specific types of flavors. And so the flavors that people are interested in are flavors that have high concentrations of some combination of sugar, fat, and salt. So it's actually a simple matter for people to get very healthy and to get very fit. All they have to do is eat out of the produce aisle, okay? If they eat out of the produce aisle and don't process their food in a blender and don't grab a bunch of peanuts and cashews and turn them into nut butter and then eat it with a spoon, if they eat whole plant food. And my good friend, Dr. Alan Goldhammer, has been recently correcting me and banging me over the head and saying, quit calling it, you know, whole food plant-based. He says there's nothing plant-based about it. It's whole plant food, okay? Meaning it's whole. We eat the whole food. We're not grinding it into powder and then snorting it the way people will do. So this is
Chef AJ says the food, the whole food, and nothing but the food. So help you God.
Yes, which actually brings me to another point, which is that one thing that this person can do is join Chef AJ's group, get support there. This is a really comprehensive place for getting a great deal of support. The other thing that we do is to, and that we recommend, is a period of fasting. So at a place like Fasting Escape or True North, this is a place where you can go through a period of time where you have just water. And what will happen after several days of this is that your taste buds will go through a process of readapting to their normal sensitivity to the normal caloric densities of natural foods for people. You and every animal on earth is designed by nature to absolutely love whole natural food of the species. Whatever your species is, if you're a saber-toothed cat, you're designed to love, gazelles. And if you're a human being, you're an omnivore, but you are absolutely very keen on whole plant foods. If you're not keen on whole plant foods, it's because your taste buds have become used to or neuro-adapted to the richer foods, which is, of course, what are ubiquitous. In other words, that's the food that everybody eats. That's the food that everybody sells. And so that is the food environment that people find themselves in. However, to once again reiterate, the solution to this problem is actually at hand. People are extremely frustrated with this problem. It is an enormous problem that sits right in the middle of people's happiness, and not to mention their health. And so, of course, this is a big problem. It's puzzling. This is a person who has diligently worked at different programs. Those programs are almost never the right program. You won't see hardly any programs ever saying, your job is to eat a diet consistent with the natural history of your species. Yeah, they don't say that. And the reason, what they say is, if you have a little of this, then you can have a little of that. And a little of that winds up being some kind of processed rich food. And then your taste buds do not become neuroadapted to whole plant food. And then you are consistently craving the richer foods because you constantly tease the organism into understanding that those foods are available. And the memory systems continue to recycle their determination to orient you towards the richest food in the environment. Whereas if you aren't continually teasing the system, then that's going to quiet that down a great deal. It will quiet it to a very quiet level, to what I call being in a deep groove. So there are many people who have made this journey. For example, Chef AJ is one of them, where over a period of several months, she went from a pretty healthy but not a whole plant diet, but a plant-based diet where there was some rich processed plant food. Even though it's vegan, and it was too rich and inconsistent with the natural history of the organism, and as a result, she was carrying more weight than she wanted to. When she switched to a whole plant food diet, what happened is she went through the process of the body then re-regulating its weight right down to essentially optimum. So that's how it works. And what happens then along this journey, often a water fast is a terrific way to reorient the taste buds very quickly. What will happen is there is no sacrifice in terms of the enjoyment of the food. The sacrifice becomes another issue. It comes social. In terms of the feedback from family and others, my attitude is, hey, just ward people off with the concept that, we're just going to run a crazy experiment. We're trying something new. Oh, well. Like, we're not going to argue with them about the merits or whether it's right or wrong, whether it's going to work. We're not going to be a fortune teller and say that this is going to be the great solution. And the Dr. Schmo and other Dr. Schmo, they all say it's great, so now I'm going to do this. Forget it. Don't defend it. Say, probably won't work. Just get them off your back right away. Yep, it's probably going to be another loser. Oh, well. but I'm just going to try it anyway and see what happens. This completely pushes them away from you in terms of their getting their corn pecker in your business, okay? And then you get some help, get some support if you can, if it's within your means. Go to a place like Fasting Escape. Give yourself a break. Give yourself a huge running start at this problem. Join Jeff Agee's group if that's the best thing for you to do. And in this way, do neither, and just grab the ball by the horns. You know, grab the bull by the horns and do what needs to be done to dig yourself out of the hole. It's a difficult thing to do. It's surprisingly difficult. But I can tell you that when people do this, they will tell you that it's the best thing that they ever do for themselves.
Fantastic. Yeah. And yeah, I've had a couple of people come and stay here from Chef AJ's group and from the podcast. So if people are interested in just looking what the Fasting Escape program is about and a little bit about water fasting, they can visit www.fastingescape.com. And Dr. Lai, you're going to be coming and speaking in September as well. So
yes,
it'd be good to
always
have you
come
here.
Down there. I do a once a month trip now. It's my new Mecca trip to Los Angeles. So I love your place. It's great.
All right.
What else we got?
Okay, so our next question, and we've got a caller on hold as well. So a couple of callers on hold. So we'll take a couple more questions, then we'll get them.
Yeah.
We'll get the callers there. So callers, stay on hold. We know you're here. Okay, all right, dear Dr. Lyle, I'm overweight and I struggle with eating healthy, but I'm getting there slowly. But my doctor's not supportive of about my diet change at all. She's telling me that she has to put me on blood pressure medications and oral diabetes medications for my prediabetes. I know I have a ways to go with my weight loss and my eating habits, but I just don't like taking medications. How can I get my doctor on board?
Well, I wouldn't bother getting your doctor on board. obviously, if they're not screaming at you, your numbers are not so intimidating as for us to be intimidated at all. Obviously, if a person has a massive disaster of a diabetes condition, we have to look at it a little bit differently. But this person clearly doesn't have such a condition, and therefore we don't need to be the slightest bit intimidated by anything this doctor is saying. The solution to the problem is not management of diabetes. As Dr. Kim, who's the director at Dr. McDougall's program, says, that's all he learned in med school, management, okay? You manage the condition as people slowly slip away. You don't need to manage this condition. You need to fix it. And the solution, the person says they're having some success, slow weight loss. I don't know what they mean by slow. People usually have a misunderstanding of how quickly the body is going to shed weight when you do the diet properly. So most of the time, a pound a week is very rapid and outstanding weight loss. You're shedding about 4,000 calories a week or about 500 or 600 calories a day below equilibrium in terms of your outgo is exceeding your input by a very wide margin. So the body is essentially returning to normal very, very quickly, okay? So a pound a week is 50 pounds a year, folks. Unbelievable. So anybody that's got diabetes and is 50 or 60 pounds overweight or pre-diabetic at 50, 60, 70 pounds overweight, understand that you will do an entire metamorphosis within a year if you're losing a pound a week. Now, if it's slower than that, it's a little hard to even tell if it's happening. And maybe one of the problems is that we're not quite that diligent when it comes to the diet. So once again, there's a reason why in the 35 years of True North, what we say is, hey, we fast people and put them on a really healthy diet. Same thing, same story. So and sometimes people can use other things. They might do a 2 or 3 day juice fast at home and then get real clean, or come to Nate's place and then get yourself clean. The story is always that we're moving towards a whole plant diet or something very similar. I'm not doctrinaire about animal food versus non-animal food. Many of my friends and colleagues are. That's not the biggest issue. Sometimes people put vegan at the top of the food chain here as if that's the panacea for everything. It's not. It's a question of how good a job your diet mimics the diet of our natural history. So eating vegan pizza and corn chips and you know, soy ice cream and a beer. This is no great diet. The great diet comes when you're eating a high percentage, and maybe even exclusively your diet coming from whole plants. And so in any event, same kind of answer to answer number one. The solution is to get in what I call a deep groove, and this person is clearly doing enough right things that the weight appears to be coming off. they also may not understand what fast and slow means. So this is why I don't like people watching the scale too closely, because they get discouraged when the weight goes up a day and then it goes down and goes up and down and sideways, and they just get demoralized and they don't stick with the dietary plan, because they are essentially getting false feedback from what's happening on the scale. The scale meaningfully moves every month. So that's why I have people weigh themselves 3 times in a row at the beginning of the month, take the average. That's your baseline. A month from now, we're going to see whether or not it's down. If it's down 3 pounds a month from now, pretty good. If it's down 1 pound a month from now, not so good. Okay, not if you're substantially overweight. That means you're not doing enough. And so if you need help with that, get help. But that's the solution to this problem. The solution is not medication management. And we don't need to get your doctor on board, because your doctor does not know what a healthy diet will do. They just don't. Anthony Lim, just a brilliant guy that's works with us both at True North and at the McDougall program. He just says, you know what, he just never saw it. On all his years of practice, this is a very fancy mind. And he just said, you know, I heard about it. His dad had told him about it. His dad was very excited about this and had learned a great deal. And Anthony came and he said, hey, I want to work with you guys. We're like, of course, for God's sakes, with his resume, please. Okay. And he came in and he says, wow, look at this. No more management of the disease. We reverse it. We get rid of it. And so and then we say goodbye to the doctor for this question. All right, let's go on.
Fantastic. Yeah, I just had a lady come in, 30 years of uncontrolled high blood pressure, doctor's putting on 3 meds, and they're looking all kinds of ways to lower her blood pressure, still doesn't work. And she fasted. She was here for 10 days, only fasted for 5 days, 8 for 7, 2 in the beginning, and then 5 afterwards, or 3 afterwards.
Yes.
Left the place, blood pressure completely normal, no more meds.
Yes. That is
Expect that. I thought it was going to take the average of Dr. Lyle, your study, the blood pressure study and high blood pressure, where the average was 10.6 days, which I told her in the beginning. And it turns out it was, you know, it worked out much quicker than I expected.
Yes, spectacular. Yeah, the what the body can do when you give it a break is something to see, and it's almost unknown. So I recommend for anybody that's considering this to go on Netflix, if they've got it, and watch a documentary called The Science of Fasting, and it will tell you the story of essentially unknown technique that is sitting right under the noses in our noses in the modern world, and its extraordinary safety record, how valuable it can be for people. All right.
Fantastic.
Let's go on.
All right. So we've got a couple of callers on hold here.
Sure.
So we're going to take the first one. Okay,
yeah.
Caller, where are you calling from? Welcome to the show. This is the 949 area code.
Oh, hi. My name's Allie. I'm calling from Southern California.
Yes. Okay,
well, hello,
Allie.
Allie. Welcome.
Oh, all right. Tell us what's
Fire
going on,
ready.
What's happening, and what are
okay.
we trying to work
I'm sorry.
On?
So anyways, I'll give you a little bit of backstory. So I have one friend, and she's overweight, like definitely. And then for myself, you know, I'm whole food, plant-based, SOS-free, pretty in shape, whatever. So anyways, we talk a lot, and I try and hold my tongue a bit when she kind of bashes at my diet, you know, complaining about how, you know, she can never eat that way because she would never be full with all that, without that lack of protein. And how, you know, she needs to eat Whole 30 so that she can start losing weight and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
But anyway, this last, she starts venting to me and then straight up asking me if I think that she's fat. And the reason that she's asking me this is because because I guess at work she's been mistaken for one coworker that she sees as being, you know, very large, but she does not see herself as being that same weight. And so she, you know, goes about looking for a picture of this one coworker, and, you know, to myself, they look pretty much the same. So, you know, I try and dance around the question, like, not calling her fat, not saying that they look the same, just like, oh, it's, you know, a weird angle, I can't really tell from this. But I definitely see this conversation happening again, and I'm kind of curious how you think I should approach it if I'm asked again. Because, you know, I want to be a good friend, and I don't want to lie to her, but I also want to be a good friend, and I don't want to hurt her feelings.
Wow. Kind of a new one for me. You know, if it's a woman asking her husband, the right answer is no.
Exactly. But, you know,
you look
I
great.
Feel like,
okay.
Like, so I try and tell her, you know, like, I, you know, I, it's not like, you know, what I think about her or anything like that, but
right.
I'm just curious.
You know what?
Dance around that question.
This is probably what I would say. I would probably say, you look very nice to me. Okay? Say, I think you look nice. Something like that.
Okay.
And
okay.
So we, she's, and if we, I think that's pretty good. And if she says, well, what do you think about that? You say, well, you know, we can, all of us can be in better shape. I can be in better shape. You can be better shape. All of us can. So, you know, there's always work to be done. But,
okay.
You know, I think you look nice. We say it like that and call it a day.
Yeah. Okay.
It strikes me that what's happening here is that she's, I mean, if you were to give me a wild guess, in other words, is she obese? Is she moderately overweight? What's her story?
Like, I'm really not good at telling, but I want to say, you know, she's a tall girl, like probably like around, I'm around 5'8", probably around that same height, but she probably has about 60 pounds on me.
Okay.
So yeah, like definitely up there.
She knows she's very substantially overweight. This is not some mystery, okay? The and this is not a secret. What she's mostly interested in is, you know, what's my sort of general attractiveness and presentation? Are you embarrassed of me? Do you think I look decent? Do you think I look pretty good? That's really what she's asking you.
Okay.
And so that's what we're going to feed back to her, is saying, we're going to say, hey, I think you look nice. Okay? Just nice and simple, because we're saying your looks are acceptable to be my friend. I'm not embarrassed of you. It's all cool. Okay?
Okay.
And
so
that's
like,
probably the biggest question that she's actually asking you.
Yeah.
See, because that question, is sort of subtle and complex socially, and so I'm trying to get into her head and find out what actually she has a number of things that she's anxious about, but the one that she's asking you about isn't, gee, do you think the guys think I'm hot? She knows what the guys think because they either hit on her or they don't.
Yeah.
Okay, so she already knows that story. She knows that story way well. So I think when she's asking you, she's actually asking you, am I an embarrassment to you, and what do you think about me as a person? And the answer is, you look plenty good enough to be in my coalition. You're my friend. So we say, I think you look nice. That's how we do it. Okay?
Okay, so just, you suggest just keeping it kind of vague.
Yeah. And if she
okay.
says, well, what about my fat? You didn't say what good shape I'm in. You say, well, we could all be in better shape. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
I could be in better shape. You can be better shape. Hey, everybody could be in better shape. So we've all got work to do. That's how
okay.
we say it. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
Very good. All right, Allie. Thanks for calling. Good question.
All right, Allie. Thank you.
Night, guys.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the phone call and a great question. All right, our next caller, 801, caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, I'm actually calling from Washington right now. It's full of smoke, so I'm inside.
Okay.
It's interesting weather. My question is basically, people, you know, often diverge from their parents as they get older. They get different viewpoints, and sometimes they diverge a lot in things that they hold valuable or whatnot, be it politics or religion or whatever. And my question is our generation or my generation or whatever generation that's younger than us, are they more used to kind of constant updates of information and changing their perspective? And will that give us a better chance to not clash with the generation younger than us? You know, because I like to picture my child, you know, not losing interest in our relationship or feeling incompatible with me the moment they can go off on their own. You know, I hope for an understanding, easygoing, fun relationship that we can enjoy. That's not guaranteed, of course, but, you know, depending on the kid's personality. But I feel like we're just a little bit more open these days, and we might be more compatible with changing viewpoints of our kids. And I'm wondering if it's possible to, you know, when there are those big elephants in the room, can we, can we get used to that elephant and kind of start dismissing it and enjoy the things we have in common as generational gaps, you know?
Think about this. I feel like there's a few ideas floating around in your head, and there's some suppositions in there. first of all, the things that's going to determine parent-child dynamics as people age is going to be the personalities. It's not going to be what generation we're in. So we can have just as doctrinaire and difficult and inflexible person in 2020 as we could have in 1950. The primary dynamic is going to be the personalities of the individuals themselves. So now we have a second question. So the second question is there a general cultural overlay that is changing these dynamics over time? That's an interesting question, and it's and I believe that the answer is yes. And I believe that you have spotted a trend that is measurable and has been observed, and that is that people are getting more civil and more open to alternative viewpoints. That is happening. that certainly it doesn't mean we're going to stop having, you know, vitriol on different sides of the political aisle, and it doesn't mean that it's all going to be pleasant discussion and agreeing to disagree. But it does mean that a young kid who comes out as being gay at 13 now isn't facing what he was facing 25 years ago. Same general family, same set of family dynamics and personalities. That father and mother are statistically likely to be considerably more open to this and more understanding, just because the world has now instructed people and they've learned more about these things, and so it's going to be easier, okay? And that will continue to be the case with a wide variety of issues that could have brought conflict into families before, interracial dating or a religious changes or break away from the family mold. All of these things are, everything is becoming looser with every year that passes, and that's a good thing. some people will lament that, but the truth is that that's true. But as I say, so we really have two different issues, and the lion's share of the variance as to what happens in any given family is going to not be what's happening in the culture. It's going to be the dynamics of the individual personalities in that family. Okay, there are families in the most draconian social environments that, because of the openness and emotional stability and conscientiousness of the parents, they were able to tolerate, radical change on the part of their offspring and radical openness on the offspring because, you know, they were able to do so. They had the natural flexibility. In the same way, in in the, you know, in the most sort of permissive atmosphere, there will be people that for whom that any kind of changes of this nature will be abhorrent, okay? And it's just not something that they handle well at all. I think about my own father who I don't know how well he would have handled it had I been gay. It would not have been easy for him. And it wouldn't have been easy for him today, just kind of who he is. And it certainly would have been very difficult for him in the 1970s when I was a teenager. So I'm glad I didn't have to face that issue. And I'm glad that he didn't have to face it, just because it would have been very hard on him and it would have been hard on us both. So the whereas me, I'm a different person, also living in a different generation, but I'm also a different human than my dad. And if I had a son or daughter and they had their sexuality work that direction, you know, I know, even without any training as a psychologist, et cetera, that I just naturally have a more laissez-faire attitude towards all these kinds of things than my dad did. My mom actually was much more like me genetically, just much more laissez-faire. So these are two great question, two different sources of variation, and I think that you are seeing humanity in the Western free world drift more and more towards there's probably some natural limits as to just how easygoing people can be about some of these things, but we have not found that limit yet. And the world is moving in an increasingly civilized direction. All right, good question.
To follow up briefly, would you say that, per individual, do these elephants in the room get easier over time? Do people tend to realize that they value the relationship more than a particular thing that they take a hard stance on?
You know, I don't actually know. I think I'm not sure what you're asking that is different than what I just said. So that you're trying to take it down to a micro level, and I'm saying that has to be happening because we observe this process on the macro level.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
So that the culture, humanity is actually at a remarkably fast pace. It's growing up and getting better. And this has been noted by Steven Pinker, and he has some fine documentation of this. He is astounded, actually, at how quickly this is happening. In other words, we are quite a different society, 150 years later than we were, in 1868, for goodness sakes. And we're quite a different society than we were in, 100 years ago in 1918. So we have made astonishing progress on these issues, and I still see all kinds of pockets of resistance that are there, and of course they're going to be there. How long they're going to be there, I don't know, but we see that the general trend is exactly as you're hypothesizing, that humanity under free societies is moving in a very, very promising and very positive direction. So
thanks so much
for your call. You bet.
All right. Thank you for the great question. And because we're today in the habit of promoting the Fasting Escape,
go right ahead. Why don't we just go ahead and do it again?
Yeah, just to hammer home, 30 years ago when Dr. Alan Goldhammer, my mentor, started the Fasting Clinic, the Center for Conservative Therapy, which later became True North Health Center, he got into some legal trouble because the medical board thought that recommending fasting was such gross negligence that it rose to the level of criminal negligence.
Yep.
And now 30 years later, he's getting published in the British Medical Journal. And
yep.
20 years later, you guys were getting published in these articles with blood pressure, with lymphoma, and
yep.
the recent one about fasting safety. So
yep.
Times are changing.
Times are changing. We have people from the Mayo Clinic wanting to do research with us, USC, Washington University in St. Louis, from all of the country and all of the world. We have people expressing very strong interest and support. And so this is, you're right, this is an example of good ideas drive out bad ideas, just like good money drives bad money out of an economy. And so it doesn't happen evenly, and it doesn't happen, consistently, and sometimes there are switchbacks. And the pendulum can swing back the other direction. But the march of free humans is towards better and better ideas and better relationships. And we can see that literally in real time in our own lifetimes.
Fantastic.
All
right.
When
I was first in school, I was talking about, interning at True North, and I was interning here and there, kind of under the radar, because they didn't really support it that well until a couple years later.
Yes.
And it was just fascinating how low open everybody was. But now with the Fasting Escape, we even had a couple of doctors from Loma Linda come. They're thinking that this may be something really worth looking at, fasting, and all because of 30 years ago you and Dr. Goldhammer had these wild ideas.
Yeah, crazy. Oh, you know what? I had somebody write me a question, and I was embarrassed that my thinking had not been clear. And so I thought, oh boy, if she misunderstood what I was saying, then so could have everybody else. She wrote me a question and said, when I say that men will make up their mind on females aesthetically in very brief order, is that sort of fixed, or what if a woman got in better condition, lost weight, et cetera, or there were changes in either for the male or the female, would that make a difference? And the answer is absolutely. So when I say that a person doesn't put a rating in their head of what someone's mate value is and then have it remain fixed forever, the parameters of mate value, if a person changes those parameters, then it changes. Okay, so don't think that the young ladies in Liverpool weren't aware of what was happening with the Beatles, for God's sakes. Okay, a few weeks before, they were just kind of a cool rock band that they didn't know much about, but then they have a big hit and everything turns fancy, and then what do we got? Swooning in the Aisles, same guys, okay, same music. So success will change mate value of males. Success will not change mate value of females, because males aren't looking to get provisioned so that their pregnancy, can be protected, for God's sakes. But on the other hand, females' appearance, as their appearance changes, absolutely the male psychology can change. So, I had thought that would go without saying. But her question is very well and intelligently asked, and so sincerely, it's like, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry if anybody didn't understand that implication. I had a woman came to me about 20 some years ago. She was a very fancy psychologist, coach, and everything else under the sun. And she came to our center, and her husband had not shown any interest for many years. And she couldn't understand this. And I explained to her that excess weight mimicked pregnancy, and males don't mean to be dogs. They're just designed by nature to try to reproduce their DNA. And if it looks like their DNA has already been reproduced, then why bother? If it looks like the female cannot be impregnated, then they're not going to be nearly as interested. Now, of course, some men will be, but most men won't be. Men are they're like eagles looking for the female waistline. And the reason why they're built that way is they're built to, along the lines of energy conservation, don't be wasting energy on a place that there's no possibility for a pregnancy to take place when there's another place where there could be. So at the root cause of behavior, decision-making, you're going to see the principle of energy conservation is going to weave its way through everything. It's going to weave its way through people wanting to eat rich food instead of food of less caloric density. It's going to weave its way through people can't bother to exercise. And it's going to weave its way through the fascination with gambling to try to get a whole bunch of money for almost no effort. and it's going to weave its way through job preferences where you get, you know, more pay for the same work, et cetera. And it's going to weave its way into males not being interested sexually in females that are overweight because it would be a bunch of effort wasted. Okay? So at any rate, she did a water fast, ate healthy, lost about 25 pounds. Her husband, who was out of town, came to visit. And she was actually didn't believe me or considered it to be a bizarre idea. Maybe I looked too young then and had a mustache, looked like a little doofus. I mean, I don't know, but she listened.
You weren't overweight enough.
Yeah. She didn't think too much of my hypothesis. And then when her husband came, he saw her and immediately got frisky. And to her credit, she reported it to me. And she was like, "I'll be darned." He went right down to my backside and my waistline. And he was doing just what you say, which is that males will like to take their hands along the curve of the waistline to the hips in order to – that's a tactile mechanism for checking the vision. These are independent neural circuits, both of which are data through different sensory means that will help detect pregnancy and confirm whether it's there or not. So that's exactly what he did. And he was sexually interested in her, and she was like, "I'll be darned. What do you know about that?" Yeah, what do you know indeed? So that's why this is such a big deal to know about these things.
Fantastic.
Okay. Is that enough for 1 week?
I think that's enough for 1 week. I think we will follow up with everybody when we get back next week. If people want to listen more to some of Dr. Lyle's thoughts on health and wellness, it's esteemdynamics.com, is it?
Yes, esteemdynamics.com.
SteamDynamics.com. And if you want to go to the Fasting Escape, it's www.fastingescape.com. Dr. Lyle, that's it for 1 week. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Fabulous. Good talking to you, Nate.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.